This is Hidden Brain. I'm Shankar Vedantam. We hear a lot about winners at the Olympics, but most athletes at the Games come home losers. Today, we're going to take a look at what losing does to athletes, to fans, and to teams. Dan Pink is going to join me later in this episode, but first, we're going to start with the story of one athlete.
So I actually started judo since I can remember. I mean, literally the day I could walk is when I was on a judo mat. My dad was a judo instructor, and he owned a judo school in Peabody, Mass. So I literally walked into the sport and started practicing at the age of 5. I started competing at the age of 6.
This is Jimmy Pedro. As a young child, he was groomed for glory by his dad, who was a judo coach. His father had tried but never made it to the Olympics.
Ever since I was a young kid, you know, my goal and his goal was sort of to help me get to the Olympics.
Jimmy competed on the U.S. judo team in the 1992 Olympic Games, but he didn't win a medal. In 1996, in Atlanta, he made it to the medal stand. He won bronze. After that Olympics, Jimmy Pedro's trajectory kept rising. He won first place in the 1999 Judo World Championship. In 2000, heavily favored to win, Jimmy flew to the Olympic Games in Sydney, Australia.
Sydney was very tough for me. You know, you're 1999 world champion. A year later, you're going to the Olympic Games. No American has ever won gold in the sport of judo. Sort of all of the media attention and focus is on Jimmy Pedro to bring home America's first gold medal ever. I was in, you know, every publication, newspaper. Everybody was picking me to win gold. I had been on a great win streak heading into that Olympics, and I wanted it so badly.
Almost immediately, things didn't go according to plan.
I lose my first fight in the Sydney Olympics. And then I told my coach when I came off the mat, I said, I just don't feel right. I don't know what to tell you. My body just doesn't feel right today. I don't have it. He said, all right, well, let's just get up for the next one. And I strung together 4 wins in a row. And I set up a bronze medal match. And, you know, confident going into the bronze medal match. I had just won 4 in a row. I still don't feel great, but I'm winning. Who cares? Let's go get a medal. And lo and behold, I walked out in the very first 30 seconds of the match. I get thrown to my mat, match over, I lose. I finish 5th in Sydney. So you go from, you know, America's hope to win a gold, having sacrificed 4 more years of your life since Atlanta, and now you come back and fail and don't even step up onto the podium of your 3rd Olympic Games. I felt like a complete and utter failure, and it was very devastating. And I didn't get over that moment for a very, very long time.
The loss was publicly devastating. The New York Times devoted an entire article to the disappointing performance. In it, Jimmy's coach said, quote, "It just wasn't meant to be. I don't know what to say." Jimmy Pedro felt like a loser after the Sydney Games. But you could look at it another way. He was judged to be the 5th best judo player in the whole world. That's got to count for something, right?
When you're a competitive athlete, you can't see it that way. When you have your sights set on a goal and you give everything you possibly have to reach that goal, especially when you've done it before, you know, I stepped up on the podium before, so I know what the feeling was like. I wanted that so badly. Again, when it doesn't happen, it's absolute rejection, it's absolute failure, and there's really no consolation to say, well, it's still successful, you made 3 Olympics. It's not enough. I was not satisfied, I was not happy, and it really just couldn't deal with defeat. I had to succeed.
After the Sydney Olympics, for the first time since he was 5, Jimmy Pedro quit competitive judo. He stopped training every day. He got an office job at Monster.com. 2 years passed. And then in 2002, his job brought him to Salt Lake City to help out with the Winter Olympics. One night, as he watched a speed skater receive a gold medal on the podium, Jimmy Pedro had an epiphany.
I saw him step up on the podium, and at that moment when they're putting the medal around his neck, I looked at my boss from Monster.com and I said, you know what? I'm going back to the Olympics again. I called my wife from Metals Plaza in Salt Lake City. Creed was playing in the background. I picked up the phone. I said, Marie, you're not going to believe where I am right now, but I'm at the Olympic Games. I'm watching this kid get his gold medal. I have to do this again.
Jimmy's wife gave him the green light. Jimmy began to train again. In 2004, in Athens, in the bronze medal competition, Jimmy faced down his opponent.
And in the end, he ended up tapping out and quitting, you know, and that's when the moment I knew I had won my second Olympic medal.
Jimmy Pedro, ein Comeback, das sich gelohnt hat, das muss man sagen.
I was going to step up on the podium. I was going to end my career on a high note and as a success instead of a failure.
Jimmy Pedro retired from judo after the 2004 Olympics. He now coaches the U.S. Olympic judo team. And as part of that job, he spends a lot of time talking with young athletes, athletes who've trained their whole lives just like he did. We asked Jimmy what he plans to tell young judo players who don't medal at Rio.
I don't know. It's going to be a hard conversation. You know, the conversation is really focused on, hey, let's look at things. Did you do everything in your power to be the best athlete you could be? If that answer is yes, then you can look yourself in the mirror and say, hey, I gave it my all. It just wasn't meant to be. It wasn't meant to be.
We reminded Jimmy that it wasn't meant to be was the same thing his coach told the New York Times in 2000 after that devastating loss in Sydney.
Yes, you have to be able to rationalize it or justify it and make sense of it. Otherwise, you'll drive yourself crazy with second-guessing and there has to be some stronger power, some stronger reason out there as to why it didn't happen. I think, and that's the only way you can justify it, you know.
Coming up, Dan Pink and I play Stopwatch Signs. Today's topic, what losing, whether in sports or in politics, can do to you. Stay with us.
Let's take a moment to thank and share a message from our sponsor, LearnVest. LearnVest is an online financial advice company focused on empowering people nationwide to make good decisions with their money. Studies show that writing down your goals makes you 49% more likely to achieve them. That's why when you work with LearnVest, you tell them what you want to accomplish, and they create a customized financial plan to help you get there. Plus, they pair you with a financial planner to help keep you on track. To see a sample plan and get a $50 credit, go to learnvest.com/brain.
Welcome back. This is Hidden Brain. I'm Shankar Vedantam. I'm joined now by Daniel Pink. He's the author of several books about human behavior. On this show, his title is Senior Stopwatch Science Correspondent. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you, Shankar.
On Stopwatch Science, Dan and I give one another 60 seconds to summarize interesting social science research. As we approach the one-minute mark, our producers, this time, are going to bring up the Olympic anthem, signaling it's time for us to stop. Our topic today is losing. How does losing affect our emotions? How does it affect our health? But also, how can losing help us win? Now, I've had extensive experience throughout my life with losing, but Dan is a stranger to defeat. So we're going to see if he has anything useful to say. Dan, if you're ready, your first 60 seconds starts now.
Sports isn't just about sports, right? It's about big things, values, respect, honor. And the Olympics may represent the apotheosis of this belief. Mm-hmm. Bring countries together on the playing field rather than the battlefield, and the real winner is world harmony. Well, a 2013 paper in the Journal of Applied Social Psychology sprinkles a few raindrops on this idealistic parade. Four German scholars tracked the attitudes of high school students in Germany before and after two huge soccer competitions, the FIFA World Cup and the UEFA European Soccer Championships. they found that when the German national team lost a match, the teenagers' views of people from the winning country soured. So when Italy eliminated Germany in the World Cup, the students became more prejudiced toward Italians. When Spain defeated Germany in the finals of the European Championships, they grew more biased against Spaniards. Meanwhile, in both cases, the German youth's opinions of other foreigners, Brazilian, Polish, French, remain more or less the same. So yes, the Olympics can stir warm feelings, but only if your team wins.
In other words, most of the time, since most countries are losers in the Olympics, not winners, the Olympics must be then a net gain for prejudice in the world.
It could be that this grand experience all about social harmony might be achieving the exact opposite.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And that puts me in the Olympic spirit. speaking of the Olympic spirit, you now have the 60-second stopwatch science competition Heat 4 that begins right now.
All right, losing may not just increase your hostility towards people who beat you, it might also increase your waistline. Yann Cornil and Pierre Chandon from INSEAD looked at what happens to fans when their teams lose. They specifically examined the 2004 and 2005 NFL seasons in the United States. People in cities with losing teams buy more unhealthy food in the days following a defeat. On Sunday, this is game day, consumption in winning cities and losing cities, about the same. On Tuesdays, about the same. But on Monday, the day after the game, the researchers find that saturated fat consumption increases by about 16% in losing cities. Consumption increases by 28% in the most football-crazy cities, and the effect is stronger when the team plays against a closely matched competitor and loses narrowly. In contrast, they find that saturated fat consumption decreases by 10% following a victory. Why is this happening? You lose and you look for things to compensate for your feelings of heartbreak and loss. So, if you live in Ohio and you're a fan of the Cleveland Browns, it may be time to follow Dan's lead and move.
Oh, that's harsh to us Buckeyes. Now, I left Central Ohio, the Columbus area, for reasons unrelated to the Browns. But I think the better solution is just to keep eating those French fries, keep eating those donuts, and eventually, this season perhaps, the Browns will win the Super Bowl.
All right, so that's Dan's winning strategy. Let's see what his strategy is for his next segment, which starts right now.
Well, my fellow Ohio natives might remember the 1980 Cleveland Browns, a football team that ended up in so many close games, they became known as the Cardiac Kids. I thought about that team when I read this next study from 2013, in which four physicians and medical researchers analyzed whether closely fought Super Bowl games affect the heart health of fans. For part of the research, they chose the 2008 Super Bowl. You might remember it. That's when the New York Giants, in the final minute of a dramatic game, upset the then undefeated New England Patriots. The researchers found that in Massachusetts, home of the Patriots, the week after the loss, heart-related deaths increased by about 20% compared with the previous year.
Wow.
The New York region, home of the winners, showed no change in heart deaths at all. Patriot fans, as many people know, are among the most intense in the NFL, and that devastating Super Bowl loss might truly have broken their hearts.
You know, Dan, I wonder if this is the reason why, for many sports fans, when their teams are losing, it's almost easier just to turn off the television and stop watching, that it's just unbearable for fans to watch their teams lose. And it might just be that people are actually acting in their rational self-interest in terms of their health.
It could be. Sometimes I just have to turn off the TV during the Major League Baseball playoffs for my beloved Washington Nationals because I can't take it anymore. I think what's interesting here, though, in terms of the science, is how seriously we take this. You're talking about people eating unhealthy food. I'm talking about heart-related deaths going up. It's just a game. It's a bunch of people. They don't know me. I don't know them. They're playing a kid's game. Why do we take it so seriously that it's affecting our health? It's a fascinating question. I think it's one of the things that makes sports so appealing as a subject to study.
You know, and the next year, the same players that are playing for the Nationals are going to be playing for another team. You're really arguing about laundry.
Right, exactly. That's a great Jerry Seinfeld line. You're rooting for laundry. But still, it's laundry that somehow matters. But what matters even more than the laundry of professional sports, Shankar, is whether you can stick to your time. Your 60 seconds begins right now.
Speaking of broken hearts, it breaks my heart when people come in late and interrupt the game by asking me who's winning. That's because social science research suggests we don't really have to ask people about the score. It's painted on the face of players. Now, probably it's painted on the faces of sports fans as well, although the research didn't study that question. Researchers Philip Furley at the German Sport University Cologne and Jeffrey Schweitzer at the University of Heidelberg found that we can usually tell who's winning and who's losing just by looking at the players. College students had to watch only 4 seconds of a bunch of sports games, either basketball or table tennis, to know who was winning and who was losing. Even when the students were not familiar with either game, they were able to tell not only who was winning, but whether the game was close or a blowout. Now, I imagine there are probably exceptions to this rule. I don't know if you've noticed, Dan, but all the politicians running for president always seem to look delighted, no matter how bad things are for their campaigns.
You know what? I think that's actually a nice contrast between politics and sports, because sports doesn't have that kind of artificial layer on it. So you watch an NBA game and you look at the bench and you can tell immediately whether that team has lost. And these are grown-ups. These are adults. And they're sad because they lost a game involving throwing a ball through a hoop.
And in fact, they would look like idiots if they looked cheerful when their team was losing, except we somehow seem to give politicians a pass on this.
I guess so, because I guess our expectations of athletes are much higher than our expectations of politicians.
And my expectations of you are even higher than my expectations of athletes, Dan. Your next 60 seconds starts right now.
The title of this study poses an intriguing question. Can losing lead to winning? To find out, Jonah Berger of the University of Pennsylvania and Devin Pope of the University of Chicago analyzed more than 18,000 games in the National Basketball Association, the NBA, looking in particular at the score at halftime. They discovered that teams that were losing by 1 point at halftime were actually more likely to win the game than teams that were leading by 1 point. Now, at some level, this makes no sense. Teams that are behind at the half end up losing the vast majority of time. But a 1 point deficit was the exception. In fact, being down by one at the midpoint was about half as valuable as having the home court advantage.
Wow.
This study shows how context affects motivation. If you're ahead of your opponent, you might become complacent. If you're way behind, you might give up. But if you're losing by just a little, you might work harder to close the gap and turn losing into winning.
You know, I absolutely love that study, Dan. And as you were speaking, the analogy that sprang to mind was an analogy from education, which is when you're trying to teach a student, you really just want to stay one step ahead of the student, give the student a feeling that if they just ran a little bit harder, they could catch up. Get too far ahead or get too far behind, and you end up discouraging the student. But when you give the student the sense that if they just ran a little bit faster, they could catch up, that's when you're in the sweet spot.
I think the search for that sweet spot is really essential, whether we're parents or teachers or coaches, or even if we're navigating our own lives. I mean, I think about this myself and say to myself, you know, play like you're 1 point behind. I think that's great guidance for doing anything really well. So now let me turn it over to you. Shankar, you have 59 seconds for this next one.
All right, we've talked a lot about losing in the context of sports, and that makes sense. But winning and losing can also have powerful effects in many other domains of life. Lamar Pierce at Washington University in St. Louis and his colleagues wanted to know how badly voters feel when their political party loses a presidential election. They used data of people's self-reported happiness during the week before and after the 2012 presidential election. Now, there's lots of debate about the best way to measure happiness, but simply asking people is one way to do it. The researchers found that Democrats weren't noticeably more happy following Barack Obama's re-election, but Republicans were absolutely devastated. Now, Democrats probably felt the same way in 2004 when George W. Bush was re-elected, although this study didn't look at that election.
Now there, at least in a political race, people might be reasoning somewhat rationally. They're saying, oh my, if the Democrats won, my taxes are going to go up. If the Republicans won, that means that the social safety net is going to be shredded. But there is something about being in these zero-sum contests where one person wins and one person loses. When you're on the short end of that, it feels really, really bad, whether it is an NBA game or whether it's a presidential election.
And there's a lot of research, I think, from political psychology that actually argues that much of the way we relate to politics is very similar to the way we relate to sports teams. So even though at a rational level people will say they care about policy and whether this policy wins or that policy loses, at some level they are reacting to the political parties the same way that you react to the Washington Nationals or the New York Yankees?
I hate the Yankees.
All right, so there you have it. Winning makes you broad-minded and losing makes you prejudiced. Winning makes you eat salads and losing makes you eat cheesesteaks. Losing isn't just bad for your pride and your waistline. It might even put you in the hospital with a heart attack. Players in sports often wear the signs of victory and defeat on their faces, and losing by a little can help you come back to win. And finally, if your party loses the presidential election, America might be great again, but you certainly will not be. Dan, thank you for joining me.
Always a pleasure.
This episode of Hidden Brain was produced by Chris Benderev and edited by Jenny Schmidt. Our staff also includes Kara McGurk-Allison, Maggie Penman, and Renee Klar. We used original music in this episode from Ramteen Arablouei. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and listen to more of my work on your local public radio station. If you like this episode, give us a review. It helps. I'm Shankar Vedantam, and this is NPR. Thanks for listening to Hidden Brain. This week's a great time to check out Planet Money. The team has gone into the oil business. Over the next 2 weeks, Planet Money is buying crude oil straight from the source and following it all the way to your gas tank. You can find Planet Money at npr.org/podcasts and on the NPR One app.